Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Welcome back into the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. We are suddenly in the final week of March 2024, a really important month for the Penn State Nittany Lions football program, a very busy month overall for the Penn State Athletic Department. Mark Brennan was all over coverage of the wrestling program's 11th national championship run since 2011. That took place over the weekend over at Lions247.com. You can find coverage of that. And then Daniel Gallen's also been covering the women's basketball postseason run. They picked up a couple victories to start that out on their home court. We're going to hear from Daniel in just a moment. We're going to look back to our experience from Tuesday evening, spending time at Penn State practice facilities. We were outdoor for a really nice evening of Penn State football practice action. We returned to the facility a couple hours later for post-practice conversations with James Franklin, with new defensive coordinator Tom Allen, with a few different veteran members of this Penn State roster. So we'll start to circle a few different storylines that stand out to us now that Penn State is through seven practices on a 15 practice schedule. Practice number 15, you know it as the blue-white game. So they're right midway through this thing now. We're going to talk about a few different topics and Daniel Gallen helping us do that. Daniel, how you doing?
Doing great, Tyler. Nice to be here and excited to talk some Penn State.
But they always give us plenty to talk about after these Tuesday look-ins at practice. We've had three consecutive Tuesday looks now. The last couple were followed by the post-practice interviews. There's a lot of different directions we could go to begin with what we did Tuesday and the coverage that's over at Lions247.com, including our VIP practice report, full photo gallery. We've got highlight videos, and we've got a lot of quotes, notes, and context up there. I think we probably got to go with the new guy in town, though, Tom Allen. Last week, we put a lot of focus on the podcast about what we heard about and from Andy Kotelnicki last Tuesday as the offensive coordinator stepped up to the microphone for his first time since his introductory press conference. Tuesday night also marked the first time we had heard from Tom Allen since his December introductory press conference. He's someone who spent the last 7 years as a head coach in the Big Ten over at Indiana, butting heads with Penn State on an annual basis in the Big Ten East Division. Now he's here. He's joined forces with James Franklin, and we heard from him as much as he could give us because his voice is pretty shredded up already, and we heard that would be the case with Tom Allen from him doing his hollering on the field. But Daniel, this is a guy who kind of repeatedly keeps coming back to what he told us way back in December. He feels like his heart is in the right place when he's focused on defense, not necessarily going adrift with some of the CEO type roles that he had to fill in Bloomington the last 7 years.
It still sounds like some of those head coaching habits are dying hard a little bit. James Franklin made a joke about how Tom Allen has had to adjust to not using the whistle as much, which, yeah, that belongs to James Franklin. And, I think they have a pretty good sense of humor about it, even though Tom Allen said that the first time he did it, James Franklin wasn't too happy. But it does seem like that Tom Allen is a little bit in a rejuvenated position. I think that it's kind of similar to what we heard from Manny Diaz 2 years ago when he came in. I think that, you know, these are two guys that are both in very different stages of their careers. I think with Manny Diaz, it was pretty explicit that, you know, he wanted to get back into a head coaching job. With Tom Allen, it seems like he could be content just sort of riding things out as a defensive coordinator. without all those responsibilities. But I think that you're still, it's similar to Diaz in that you're getting, two guys that, didn't necessarily have the most success as head coaches and were in tough situations, with Manny Diaz and what was going on at Miami and how that ended. And then Tom Allen, kind of seeming like he turned the corner a couple years ago and not being able to sustain that at Indiana. But I do think that having Tom Allen, as your defensive coordinator, I think that he brings, something that is a little bit different. I think that he is kind of building on the tenets that you've had these past couple of years. Yeah, that's something that James Franklin has talked about a lot in terms of talking about kind of keeping a little bit of continuity in terms of the hiring there, where he doesn't want to bring someone in who has a completely different scheme and needs completely different personnel from what they've already recruited to the roster. We saw Manny Diaz build on kind of what Brent Pry had done during his long tenure at Penn State. And now we're kind of seeing how Tom Allen is building on what Manny Diaz did these past couple of years. So yeah, I think that when you put this team together, you're going to have some veterans who have had three different coordinators in their 4 or 5 or 6 years on campus. And I'm really curious to see when you kind of mix all of this together, how it comes out in the fall.
And this is a guy, Tom Allen, that we obviously got accustomed to as being the leader for a Big Ten program. But you look at his background, he's a guy that did a lot of his early work at the high school level down in Florida, eventually in Indianapolis. A lot of that was done as a defensive coordinator before he rose to a head coaching position. You look at how he got involved at the college level. He broke through at the Power 5 level with Ole Miss in 2012 as a linebackers coach. He worked his way to South Florida as a defensive coordinator. He initially ended up at Indiana as a defensive coordinator before being promoted to the head coaching position. And so when he discusses his ability to get back to those roots and gives us a quote, "I think it's really where my heart is," on Tuesday night. Yeah, definitely different than the Manny Diaz vibes, where even in year one here in Happy Valley, it was kind of like Penn State might be on borrowed time. How long are you going to be able to squeeze out Manny Diaz as a defensive coordinator, knowing that he's likely to be a commodity, knowing that he's likely to listen? Maybe Tom Allen could be a commodity, especially if he has success here at Penn State. This team has success collectively. It's going to rise all ships. But I do wonder if Tom Allen has the motivating factor involved like Manny Diaz did, where he clearly had an itch. He clearly had a desire, although he loved what he was doing and he loved the guys he was doing it with and he loved the staff he was doing it. This is a guy, Manny Diaz, who felt like he wanted to go out and prove he could be the CEO of a program, that he could lead his program to success. And after what happened for him at Miami as a hometown kid, dad was the former mayor of Miami, probably felt like that was the dream scenario, and it didn't play out that way. And so you knew Manny Diaz was going to be on the hunt for something new. And I think people may think Tom Allen's a little bit older than he actually is. He does have grandfather vibes. I can definitely acknowledge that. And I think the players, I've told this, it's definitely a different energy than what Manny Diaz had in the building. But he's only 54 years old. I mean, that was kind of surprising when I had to go back and double check that. Born in 1970. So it's not like he's just running out the clock here and his career is just about done and retirement's right around the corner. So he finds himself in a really interesting situation. And I think James Franklin and harping on the subject over and over again with us the last few coordinator searches, wanting a head coach for that unit, not just wanting a guy who's going to coach the defense and then be looking to James Franklin for leadership advice every second of the way. That's what you're getting here with Tom Allen. Although what Tom Allen's getting from the deal here is, I'll read the quote, "It's refreshing to be able to just focus on developing the players, building relationships with the players, and focusing on defense. The schematic part of it, the personnel part of it, the film study, I can go in there, shut my door, and then when something happens, pass it on to James Franklin." Pretty candid stuff there from Tom Allen, who just noted as well, there's so many things you don't have to deal with when you're not the head coach. So again, you said rejuvenated. I would agree there. Lacking for a voice a bit on Tuesday night as well. There's a full video over at lines247.com of Tom Allen breaking down his acclimation process and working with James Franklin and what he's learned about this squad so far. But Daniel, when you hear it from players, you were with Jalen Reed last week. You were talking with a guy like Devon Elise. These are mainstay starter position type players within this defense. What has been the player feedback? Because we know how much these guys absolutely adored Manny Diaz when he was here.
I mean, it's definitely different. I think that that's you know, pretty obvious. I thought that Kobe King put it really well last week, where he said that Manny Diaz was the type of person that you wanted to run through a wall for, where Tom Allen is explaining to them why they're running through the wall. And I asked Jalen Reed about that on Tuesday night, and he agreed with it. He said that there's a lot of teaching that's going on right now, that they're really kind of getting into the why, you know, why they're doing all these things on defense, how the system is coming together, everything that sort of goes into it. And I think that that's really interesting, because I feel like with Manny Diaz, the one thing that we heard, especially last year going into year two, where a bunch of guys, including Jalen Reed, talked about how they felt like they were really playing free. They felt like that there was not a lot of thinking. They felt like that things were, you know, a little, I don't know if simplified is the right term for it, because I don't think we saw, you know, a ton of simple things from that defense last year. But things were just taught and explained in a way where they were just out there and, you know, playing free, not thinking too much. So I think having that experience and now moving into something that might be, you know, slightly more cerebral in a different way, I think that that's something that they can build off of. But I think the one thing that you get is that it's definitely different. But at the same time, I think that this unit still has a lot of confidence from, you know, what they've done last year. And I think that there's still kind of a feeling that they trust Tom Allen. I think that they trust James Franklin to bring Tom Allen in. And they're confident that they can, you know, build off of what they did last year and, you know, kind of try to approach that standard.
And let's not discount the fact that this isn't a reformed defensive staff that Tom Allen came and kind of created in his own image. Terry Smith has been here on campus since 2014 when James Franklin got to town. Anthony Poindexter has been here a few years now. Deion Barnes, I know it's only his second year as a defensive line coach, but he has a few years preceding that as an assistant with the program. So there's a lot of deep roots on that defensive staff with a lot of the players, especially those veterans. I think that does help out the process, especially when you're working through the first couple of weeks of practice under a new coordinator. We did learn a little bit more about a couple of hybrid positions that Tom Allen has used or plans to use here at Penn State that were part of what he did at Indiana. The first of which is a new one here at Penn State. It's called the Lion. It's not new at Penn State, I should say. It's new for Tom Allen's defense, but Tommy Stevens, of course, filled the Lion position as a utility player, backup quarterback years ago under Ricky Ronnie's offense. That was when we were first introduced to the Lion. It's a little bit different now. It is on the defensive side of the ball, and it's a spot that he described as an athletic type safety or a big corner filling it. He said when the game is played in space and the offense continues to drive it into space, they plan on being based out of a 4-3, but as the offenses attack you from a different personnel standpoint, from a different tempo perspective, this is going to allow them to maybe get a different kind of athlete in space, according to Tom Allen. So you look at that position. I know it's one that came up in your conversation with Jalen Reed as well. We were kind of enamored with the Prowler package and the Prowler role here the last couple of years with Manny Diaz. The Lion is one that's going to be fun because we know how high Penn State is on their defensive backfield. We've heard from James Franklin how he thinks there's a real way to utilize their top three safeties and KJ Winston, Jalen Reed, and Zaki Wheatley on the field together. We saw a lot of three cornerbacks involved last year on the football field, but you spoke to one of those safeties again, Jalen Reed, a guy who we don't expect to be leaving the field much in 2024. What kind of feedback did you get about the Lion position and who's factoring in there?
Yeah, Reed gave some good answers that I'm going to have up on Lions 24/7 later Wednesday, where he kind of talked about the difference in philosophy between Manny Diaz and Tom Allen when it came to putting a fifth defensive back on the field, and how under Diaz it was mostly a cornerback, Daquan Hardy or Johnny Dixon, some combination of those guys either in the slot or bumping outside. But Jalen Reed said that when it comes to this Lion spot, that it's him, Zion Tracy, Cam Miller, and AJ Harris, the Georgia transfer, that are all seeing time there. In the context of him playing in that position, Reed said he was excited about it because it allows them to have three safeties on the field where he can bump down and Zaki Wheatley can come in and play a deep safety spot. We've heard some really good things about Wheatley through the spring. Reed kind of backed those up in terms of being excited about what he's doing this year. So I think that that's something that I'm really intrigued by. Because we know how much depth Penn State has in the secondary. They've recruited that really well. They've developed it really well. You've seen guys move around to different positions, and they have the depth and the luxury to do that. So it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like. But, you know, I think that with those four guys whose names came up, it's a really intriguing group. Because we've seen Jalen Reed play a ton of football. He said he slimmed down a little bit. He's lost a little bit of weight. I think that we kind of viewed him as sort of that box safety type, for a good portion of his career. So I'm curious to see what he looks like in coverage a little bit more. Zion Tracy, we know, has some really good physical tools in terms of speed and length. Cam Miller has a lot of experience. And AJ Harris is a former five-star recruit who was in the Georgia secondary for a year. So, you know, he's someone who has a really impressive background. And Jalen Reed seems excited about him and what his potential is. So I think you put all of those guys together. I think that the competition is undoubtedly fierce when you look at the caliber of those guys. And I think that it's going to add a little bit more flexibility to the back end for the Penn State defense.
Nice to know that Jalen Reed and Tom Allen are on the same page, because those are the exact names that Tom Allen gave us in terms of who's factoring in at the line position. And in fact, he said that Reed is the guy who's emerged thus far as they've gone through some on-field work in that line position. The other one we wanted to address here on the episode is the bowl position, and that's a spot that's kind of going to go by the wayside a bit now, as it turns out. It's a position that we discussed way back when Tom Allen was confirmed as the hire, and we had Jared Kelly on from our Indiana site in the 24/7 Sports Network, and discussing that hybrid edge linebacker type role. So whereas that hybrid lion spot trends from the second level towards the secondary, this one trends from the second level towards the front end of the defense. But I think Tom Allen got to campus and realized that the Penn State defensive end room is quite different than the Indiana Hoosiers defensive end room in the way it's stocked with talent and the way he described guys that have length and can run. And so it sounds like they're going to be just A-okay kind of leaning on the defensive end room for this positional role. He did say that it's a spot where the offense is going to have trouble designating who that bowl position actually is, as they do run some variations of this spot. But he really just said that they feel like the specific position that they used in the past at Indiana, they don't necessarily need to carry that over to this spot. Some things are going to survive the merge, some things aren't, and it sounds like the bowl maybe left in Bloomington to a degree, but I'd imagine there's going to be elements of that. And Abdul Carter, of course, is somebody that comes to mind. And just hearing from Tom Allen, sounds like Carter progressing day to day, as you would expect. We haven't heard a lot of big statements from anyone yet about Abdul Carter taking over practices or anything of that nature. I think everyone's kind of trying to give him some time, acclimate himself at a new spot that he wanted to be at defensive end. But James Franklin did tell us that his departure from the linebacker room does create some little bit of a pinch in terms of depth at linebacker, although they're excited for him at defensive end and what he brings to that room, which is a very stacked room. And we talked about that in our practice report yesterday. But linebacker is an area that maybe they need to find and cultivate more depth. We'll get to that subject in a moment, but I wanted to turn our attention to the offensive end of things, but by using a defender as the mouthpiece, because Jalen Reed had some interesting feedback for you when you caught up with him on Tuesday evening regarding how the Penn State offense has looked a little bit different in the way it's attacked the defense. Last year, we heard so much about the defense really having its way for long stretches during the practice, whether it was spring, preseason, in season. Maybe James Franklin was onto something last week when he said the offense was kind of keeping the defense on their heels more from the way they present and from the attitude and physicality they're bringing to the field. What more did you get on this subject from Jalen Reed?
James Franklin brought it up when he was asked a question about the linebackers earlier in the evening. And he talks about how what Andy Kotelnicki's offense has done is put a little bit more stress on the linebackers and the safeties in terms of their eyes and where things are going. And Jalen Reed really echoed that. He said that there's a lot of pre-snap motion. So it's testing their eyes, testing their keys, knowing where to go. Communication, Jalen Reed said, has been big. And then Reed said that the offense has just been way more explosive. And he said that it's been way more creative. I asked him about the kind of who specifically has kind of contributed to that explosiveness. And he said that the way that the wide receivers, you know, have been used in practice so far, you know, is helping them be more explosive. It seems like that, you know, the way that the scheme is, the way that play design is that it's freeing up guys that we know have explosive traits, someone like a Keandre Lambert-Smith or a Harrison Wallace, and letting them kind of go to work and be more explosive. So it's going to be a while or a couple more weeks before we get a real chance to see what that might look like on the field. But I do think that, you know, hearing that from Jalen Reed and what he's seeing, because he's someone that we've heard a lot of good things about his football IQ, as someone who kind of really knows what's going on back there, and is really important on the back end. To kind of hear that from him, I think that that's kind of a level of honesty that, you know, I'll file away, and kind of see, all right, what's this going to look like later on, if this is what we're hearing now. So I was kind of like, okay, like this is interesting. You know, I still, you know, it makes me a little more excited for the blue white game to see what this is going to look like on the field. But I think that that's a positive for Andy Kotelnicki, James Franklin, and this offense to kind of get that feedback right now.
We've just heard so much about how excellent Andy Kotelnicki is at creating conflict for a defense where they literally have a split second to react. And if they make the wrong read, they're going to be in trouble. And that's a big part of the reason why Andy Kotelnicki was the recipient of 24/7 Sports Offensive Coordinator of the Year Award. When you look at the offensive personnel at the skill positions, there hasn't been a major infusion across the board. When you talk about getting more explosive, getting more creative with these guys, it's a lot of the familiar names. That the top two running backs are the same. Maybe a freshman, Quentin Martin, challenges to play a role in that backfield. Tight end, we know a lot about Tyler Warren. A few of the guys have been around. Maybe a Luke Reynolds can do something as a freshman, but I think that's a tall task as well. I think the name that we all keep going to is Julian Fleming, because he's the only scholarship addition at wide receiver to this point who's available for full practice. Josiah Brown, a freshman now on campus as well, but someone who suffered an injury last year as a senior in high school, not looking at an immediate impact spot for him right now. And Julian Fleming, you certainly are. 4 years at Ohio State, he started 20 of the last 23 games. And we led off James Franklin's press conference yesterday by asking James Franklin about the differences between the 17-year-old version of Julian Fleming that he chased around the state of Pennsylvania for a few years after offering him as a rising high school sophomore, and this 22, 23-year-old version of Julian Fleming, who's got some scars, literally and figuratively, from his time in Columbus, has come out the other end motivated to get back home. James Franklin, by the way, mentioned that his uncle, his grandfather have been able to attend practice. Those are the kind of moments and opportunities that Fleming really talked about with us when he made the move to Penn State and why he picked the Nittany Lions over Nebraska coming out of the transfer portal, because of that homecoming aspect. But Franklin said there, even on his end, there was a little bit of nerves in play when he picked up the phone for the first conversation. And he was the person who initially contacted Julian Fleming on behalf of the Nittany Lions when his name was in the portal. And Franklin described that uneasiness and saying, you know, based on the way that ended the first time when he was a high school recruit, I wasn't necessarily sure how it would all play itself out. Even during the second recruiting process out of the portal, when we had our first conversation, I didn't know how it was going to play itself out. And so we know the other side of the story because we spoke with Julian Fleming back in January, had a story up about that at lines247.com. And he talked about how quickly it became apparent to him that after they broke that ice again, how much those relationships were able to be basically just reinstalled. He felt like there wasn't really a need to repair a lot. He felt like he's grown up a lot since he was a high school player, number one receiver and recruit in the country. He also felt like there's been some maturity on Penn State's end, and from the head coach to other staff members, if they've gone through things in the last several years. And so to hear it from James Franklin and out the other end saying, you know, there are no concerns. He says, quote, the guys love him. He's been awesome as a teammate. He's been very coachable. I think he has been able to kind of move on. We've moved on. There's been no talk about the past. He's just been really good. So I think that was about as complete an answer that James Franklin could have given us in that setting, Daniel. And he did speak a little bit more about the impact he thinks Julian Fleming has had across the field. But I caught up with some of his teammates afterwards and just kind of said, well, James told us this. What do you have to say? And Catron Allen said he feels like Julian Fleming can be a legitimately important leader for this team. He says he does everything right. You never see him get down on himself in front of the team. And he said he just always maintains the demeanor and the posture of being a guy who is confident in what he's doing and leads you to want to follow that kind of a player. Cam Miller was really interesting because this is a cornerback. He's a guy who's seen this wide receiver room up close and personal over and over and over again since he got to campus, covering these guys, battling against them. He told me that he sees Julian Fleming as a potential gelling point with this wide receiver room at large. And I followed up, you know, a gelling point. First off, I just wanted to confirm that he said that because that was a really interesting phrase to use. And yes, that was the phrase he used. But I kind of just wanted to know why that he felt that way. And his answer was coming from Ohio State. He was playing with the best of the best in that position. We talked about it before. He shared that room with at least four first rounders. That includes Marvin Harrison Jr. I think we can check him off that box in the first round. He was a Heisman Trophy finalist last year. And so Cam Miller says he knows what it takes for the receivers to be at that level. I feel like he can bring some of those habits here and help the receivers. And you just kind of go up and down the list. And we heard from Drew Aller and Tyler Warren right before spring practice about Julian Fleming and his accountability. And Drew Aller called him a mentor. And I know a lot of people are hearing this and saying, okay, well, is he going to give us 1,000 receiving yards and 10 touchdowns this year in this offense? Because that's what we're looking for from the receiver room. You needed more than just box score impact here in the receiver room. I think that's very well known if you followed this program closely. There's a bit of an identity issue, it felt like, for this wide receiver room. And I don't know if one man alone can kind of wave a magic wand and restore something for you. But I feel like based on the feedback, based on what we're hearing from James Franklin, we're not going to hear from Julian Fleming for a while, likely because of the transfer policy with media access. But this seems to be something that really did move the meter. I mean, we're just a couple of weeks into this, Daniel, but by the time we get out of spring practice, I'll be very curious what the feedback is on what this receiver room accomplished during the spring semester. And going back to winter workouts when he was identified as a rising leader by strength coach Chuck Losey, I feel like in terms of instant impact, you often have to wait until September to find out who those guys are. Julian Fleming is that guy right now for this receiver group. We don't know what the results look like. We don't know how much it's really going to rub off on other players, but this is precisely as advertised when he committed to the program in December.
It's easy to say, like, this is all nice and good, but we want 1,000 receiving yards in the fall. But I do think that Julian Fleming is the type of presence in the room where even if the production isn't 1,000 yards in the fall, I think that he's the type of player that is going to help these other receivers in the room, you know, put themselves in a position where they can improve, where they can increase their production, where you can find consistency. I mean, I think that that's really the biggest thing that Julian Fleming can help them with, because he's been around those greats. I think that he was supposed to be in that line of succession too when he went out to Columbus a couple years ago. And so he has similar traits and things that he can draw on. And I think that you just want to instill that in that room because, you know, at times it just seemed maybe a little rudderless in terms of you didn't know what you were going to get on a week-to-week basis out of there. Talk about the Peach Bowl, not having a completion to a wide receiver until the fourth quarter. You know, just kind of a quiet couple of games down the stretch. You know, Trey Wallace in and out of the lineup with injuries. I think that you want Fleming to be kind of a stabilizing presence, a steadying presence in there, and someone who can help these guys build foundations during the week so that on Saturdays they can go out there and build on what they're doing. I do think that he'll be able to have an impact on the field on Saturdays. I think that he has the experience, he has the skill set, and I think that you can kind of trust Andy Kotelnicki to put him in a position to be able to contribute. But I do think that he's going to help the rest of those wide receivers do similar things. So kind of like what we were talking about in terms of actually seeing things on the field, in terms of how explosive we've heard this offense can be. I'm also interested to see when we get to the blue-white game, you know, what do these wide receivers look like? How different does that group feel as we go into the summer?
And I just want to reiterate this point that I made earlier. Chuck Losey singled this guy out unsolicited when we were able to get into the weight room for the end of winter strength program. And it was three players that he mentioned that from a leadership standpoint had really taken the best step forward and had really stepped up for the entire football program. Don DeLuca. Okay, no surprise there. This guy's already a team captain. Nick Dawkins. No surprise there. Everyone will tell you he is a team captain in the making. He's working to become your starting center in 2024. And the third name, though, to be Julian Fleming, someone who just got to campus a couple months prior. Really startling, and it just kind of another feather in the cap for Fleming and his kind of hitting the ground running arrival here in Happy Valley. And James Franklin acknowledged there was a time during the high school recruitment where the things were going really well for Penn State. A lot of us thought it was a shoo-in to end up in Penn State's 2020 class and launch his college career here, and maybe become the lead receiver here. And then Franklin said there was a time when it was not so good recruiting him. And ultimately he said it didn't end great, but now here they are. 4 or 5 years later, and he says, James Franklin said, quote, he's earned the coaches and the players' trust and respect quickly. So we'll leave it there with Julian Fleming, but we'll move forward in this conversation with more receiver focus because there was a question about Harrison Wallace to James Franklin after I brought up Julian Fleming, and he took that and kind of ran with it to talk about the collective unit at receiver. And I know folks on our message board trying to read between the lines, trying to parse through these words, weren't feeling exactly rosy about the outlook it presented at the receiver spot. It's a lot of familiar names. And, you know, unlike last year when James Franklin was kind of singling or naming two guys at the top, Keandre Lambert-Smith and Harrison Wallace, sounds like he's more taking the old offensive line approach. I'm not going to say much about individual guys here. I'll let you be the judge. But what did you make of his comments, which I think were guarded optimism maybe about the receiver room and where it is? He certainly didn't want to put too much out there for us.
It's definitely one of those things where it feels like we've seen this movie before when it comes to how we're talking about this position group and what's ahead for it. And I do think it was notable that he didn't name names like he has in the past and took a little bit more of a collective look at things. But kind of the message was pretty similar. I do think that saying that he's seen improvement might be a reason for optimism. You've got a bunch of guys in that room who are going into kind of, you know, make or break years. You're having a lot of third year guys where this is kind of what, you know, when you should know what you have and when they can show you what they are as players. But James Franklin wants to see separation. And I think that that's something that he talked about a lot last year where, you know, Keandre Lambert-Smith and Harrison Wallace had separated themselves. Then he wanted a third guy to go up there. For a little while, we thought that was Omari Evans based on how the blue-white game went and the feedback that we got at the end of spring. But, you know, for now, it's kind of it seems like everyone is at a pretty similar level and James Franklin wants to see guys leap up. You know, we didn't have any bold proclamations about being able to go too deep at all three spots. I mean, they certainly have enough bodies to make that happen, but whether or not that actually happens, I think we're going to have to kind of wait and see. I did think it was interesting talking to Jalen Reed. He mostly talked about the wide receivers pretty collectively. When I followed up to ask about the explosiveness that he was seeing, but he did single out Caden Saunders as someone that he thinks can really thrive in this offense and be put in a position to succeed. Caden Saunders is a redshirt sophomore, so he's going into his third year. And we know that he had to transform his body a little bit when he got here, but he has that pedigree as a former top 100 recruit. He has, you know, he feels like the type of slot receiver, you know, kind of shifty, smaller guy who you can do a lot of different things with. You can move around a little bit. And Andy Kotelnicki seems like the type of offensive coordinator who will do those types of things. So I think that, you know, maybe that's someone that you keep an eye on there. But I think that, you know, we're all going to be waiting for the blue-white game to see who those first three wide receivers out there with Drew Aller are. I think that that'll give us a little bit of a window into things right now. But overall, I do feel like James Franklin is kind of keep adopting that prove it mindset and that prove it kind of narrative right now with that position group.
Yeah, it took me back, I think, to 2002 and the way he would approach the offensive line subject. It turned out pretty good. They ended up running the football really well, protecting the quarterback much better that fall. But it's not where you want to be right now. And look, we talked about it coming out of the Peach Bowl down in Atlanta when we were doing our post-game podcast. Guys like Caden Saunders, and I'm with you, I continue to hear good things about Caden Saunders this spring, and you want to see him, you know, be able to translate that on the field into preseason camp and ultimately on Saturdays, which is the most important thing, because we have heard good things, the flashes about Caden Saunders, but he's got 8 career catches. And right now you're just talking about guys who, whether they were top 100 prospects or blue chip prospects, whatever they were coming to Penn State, they're pretty far removed from coming to Penn State. You know, they're 2, 3, in some cases 4 years removed from coming to Penn State. And when you don't have the tangible evidence of what you can accomplish as a college competitor on game days, and the further you get away from actually doing those things on game days, and when those were on Friday nights in high school, it just starts to get a little dicey. And in some cases, you can really start to hear the clock tick down on your eligibility. So very crucial year, because while Caden Saunders only has 8 catches in his career, that's 8 more catches than his classmates, Tyler Johnson, Anthony Ivey, Mekhi Flowers, who's now in the receiver room. That's 8 more catches than Carmelo Taylor, who was the only scholarship freshman to come to campus last year at wide receiver. So there is a lot of unknown commodities in that room. And then you've got this cluster of veteran talent in Liam Clifford, Malik Mega, Malik McLean, that, you know, you've kind of seen trotted out there in different roles. Maybe they've been starters at different points, and they've never really seized an opportunity on the offensive end to be sustained playmakers. And again, just a lot to learn. You throw in Julian Fleming.
We'll be right back on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Shifting over to running back real quick, we heard from Katron Allen on Tuesday night as well, coming off the practice field, says his goal is to prove that they are the number one running back group in college football. Someone he really said some strong stuff about was Cam Wallace, the second-year running back, redshirt freshman. Feels like he has really developed a motivated demeanor, a guy who's not going to miss anything at this point, and has really stepped up his level of competition and play in year two. We talked a lot about his physical development. I think 15 to 20 pounds gained since he was announced on signing day. Last year, we were hearing that the staff felt like he might have been a steal as a three-star prospect from rural Georgia. Ultimately, didn't see him involved in game action in 2023. But this team needs a third running back. And I know Quentin Martin just came to town with a lot of accolades as a recruit and a freshman, but Cam Wallace is someone who seems to be putting himself in a solid spot there. Daniel, I just a couple other second-year players that popped up on Tuesday night and good positive feedback. Andrew Rapelier, according to Tyler Warren, has really stepped his game up. We have not seen Khalil Dinkins involved during our looks at practice. We have seen him out there as we're walking into practice. He was out in some pads yesterday but was not wearing a helmet. So I'm not sure what his situation is and how much involved he is in the practice field. But Andrew Rapelier, you'd imagine, is the beneficiary in some instances. And the redshirt freshman, very talented player, came to campus last year to a very talented room and therefore didn't burn redshirt and play a bunch. But he continues to make positive moves. Tyler Warren said the biggest thing about him is he came to campus as a guy who was already impressive as a yards after the catch player, as a guy who could run routes really solidly at his side. He said what he's really improved upon here is his role in the run game. And I know how big that was for Tyler Warren and Theo Johnson in their maturation process, going from, you know, third, fourth string guys to co-starters ultimately. And you're hearing kind of that similar path laid out for Andrew Rapelier. The other one I wanted to get to, Daniel, is Tamir Robinson. Guy that we haven't talked a ton about, kind of feels like he's been lost in the shuffle a little bit with that linebacker class in our conversations, because Tony Rojas stormed out the gates last year. He's, you know, kind of a projected starter right now, so he's a bit of a big deal. And then Kavion Keys was a scout team player of the year on defense and special teams last year from that linebacker group. Tamir Robinson's a guy who didn't play much as a high school upperclassman because of some injuries. Came to campus last year with some questions. Is he a defensive end ultimately? He's certainly looking like a linebacker. And Tom Allen said he flashed on the field at practice yesterday. He's starting to really get a good sense for it. He says he does his best work in the alley and going north-south, getting downhill and wrapping up and bringing ball carriers down. And they're just starting to get into a little bit more of a physical element, live periods on the practice field during spring ball. So James Franklin says this is a chance for linebackers to step up. But this is a guy that Tom Allen says has long levers and can run. And we can confirm that. We've seen him out there. He's one of the more rangy looking figures in that linebacker room. So Daniel, did you hear anything about maybe younger components on the roster yesterday that you'd like to share? Or am I the only one who was picking up the feedback on some of these year two players?
Jalen Reed had some good things to say about King Mack. You know, he didn't come up in that Lion, you know, slot conversation, which is something that I think we were expecting. But, you know, Jalen Reed was kind of impressed with how he's come along. You know, the experience last year was pretty valuable, and he's put himself in a position where he can, where he can contribute, where he can step in a little bit more. A little bit more on the veteran side of things. Jalen Reed also, you know, really excited about Zachy Wheatley and what he's able to do. You know, Reed thinks that this could be a breakout year for Wheatley. So we'll track that. I know we've talked about his career to date at Penn State has been pretty nonlinear in terms of, you know, maybe being on the cusp of being a, you know, big time player, you know, then kind of taking a little bit more of a back seat and maybe now in a position to move back into a little bit more of a prominent role. But, you know, with those three players that you brought up, I mean, I think you look at this running back group and Cam Wallace does stand out when you look at them. I think that we talked about it in terms of the size that he's put on since he's been here. We talked when he got here, we were kind of like, this is going to be a little bit of a project. This is someone that could take a while to get ready physically. I mean, he seemed like he was closer to ready at the beginning of last year than we really thought he would be.
So, and Daniel, I'll add to that. He was kind of positionless at the high school level. He was playing wildcat quarterback. He was his team's leading passer. He was obviously running the ball a lot, but he was a guy who even the Power Five coaches, depending on what staff you're talking to, they may have seen a defensive back. They may have seen a slot receiver. Penn State saw a running back.
Exactly. So I think that kind of everything that he's kind of had to work through in terms of finding a position, learning it, putting on size, getting physically ready. I think that when you watch him in that running back group going through drills, you can kind of see all of that coming together. So he's going to be one to really monitor as we move forward.
Let's keep it in the backfield, Daniel, because Ethan Grunkemeyer surfaced a bit. It kind of entered the chat, I guess you could say, in our spring football conversation on Tuesday evening, because when asked about the quarterback room, James Franklin started off by saying he felt like there was really good competition and back and forth between Drew Aller and Bo Perbula. He said they have both stepped up their games, and you'd hope that to be the case now, a year three on campus, working with the new offensive coordinator. Danny O'Brien, of course, has been a staple in that quarterback room, now officially the quarterback's coach. But we're wondering, you know, who's going to be the third quarterback. And Jackson Smolak is somebody who has the head start on campus, being a January 2023 enrollee. We heard a lot of nice things. We saw some of them as well about his deep ball, some of his long distance touch last year on the practice field. And he's a guy that when you kind of assemble the ratings and rankings, he's not jumping off the page, but they really Elite 11 folks loved him. He was a riser in that class, and he came to campus. But we did not see him at practice yesterday. We'll see if we see him next week. Who we did see, and you actually came up to me after practice and said, he looked pretty darn good, Ethan Grunkemeyer. And when the topic of quarterbacks came up to James Franklin, he didn't shy away from Grunkemeyer, who was the number 101 overall and top 24/7 last year, last cycle. He was the number 8 quarterback in the 2024 recruiting class overall. And here's the comment from James Franklin, quote, Grunkemeyer is really flashing and doing some nice things right now for a true freshman quarterback. What I'm most excited about is he's showing flashes right now. How is he going to look in the summer when he's had all spring and all early summer to kind of grind on the playbook, grind on the installs, watch a ton of Kansas tape, and watch a ton of Penn State tape? So nice little teaser there from James Franklin, where he's saying, I really like what we're seeing from Ethan Grunkemeyer, who I'll remind everybody should really be back home finishing out his high school senior year if he didn't enroll early. So he's getting this jump, and I'll remind folks, he spent a lot of time training with Drew Aller away from these team facilities. They have a shared quarterback trainer and Brad Mendler. So he already kind of had a little bit of a head start in learning about what some of the expectations were. But Daniel, when we look at QB3 in 2024, and that means a guy who's going to be traveling to every road game, a guy who's, you know, one injury away from being the next man up at that position, and because we've got to factor in the fact that Drew Aller is a prominent quarterback prospect who could be a prominent quarterback draft prospect, we're talking about, you know, getting things in order for a push toward the starting job in 2025. So you like the early returns on Grunkemeyer, and to Franklin's point, you wonder what it might look like as he continues to sink his teeth into this offense, into life as a college athlete, and how he's able to kind of build off of this in August.
After the first practice, I highlighted Ethan Grunkemeyer as someone who stood out to me physically. He looked a little bit bigger than I remembered from when I went out to see him play in October out in Columbus the night before the Ohio State game. So I thought that was something that was a little bit notable. You know, he was kind of a skinnier kid as we saw him go through the recruiting process, but you know, he looked a little bit bulkier, a little bit bigger. You know, no one really looks that big next to Drew Aller, but Ethan Grunkemeyer, you kind of tell that there were some gains. And then Tuesday night, I noticed him while they were throwing an out pattern to receivers coming out of the slot, and just kind of the ease with which Grunkemeyer was moving and how the ball was coming out of his hand. It just looked really smooth. There was some good zip on his passes. You know, and you know, similarly, when you put that up against, he was switching off with Drew Aller. So compared to Drew Aller, you do notice a difference just because of Aller's arm talent. But I thought that Grunkemeyer kind of stacked up favorably with that. And I think that that's a really good sign from a young quarterback. You know, I think both Perbula and Smolak aren't really known for having rocket arms. We know that Smolak throws a nice deep ball from what we've seen in pregame workouts, and also from what some of the feedback, I think it was from James Franklin, with talking about Smolak. But you know, I do think that Grunkemeyer has a really, really good arm on him. And you know, we know that he can do all the different arm angles and yeah, you know, all the off platform stuff that Drew Aller can do too. But you know, I just thought that seeing Grunkemeyer, you know, last night was the most I'd seen him throw through these three practices. I just thought it looked really good, really smooth. And I think that it's kind of notable as we move forward.
There are some, you know, comparisons you can make between Drew Aller's path and Ethan Grunkemeyer's path. They both really climbed in a big way in rankings. Grunkemeyer just to the cusp of top 100. Of course, Aller all the way to the number one overall quarterback spot by 24/7 Sports. But working with a similar trainer, you talked about the arm slots that these guys can feature in live action during the game. There's an improvisational element to the way they play this position, and part of that is because they do come from that same kind of that same mindset and working with the same trainer. The one differentiating factor, I think, that was, you know, going to be different between Drew Aller and him and anybody else in that room is the size. And you just mentioned it. Drew Aller is 6'5", 240 pounds. Ethan Grunkemeyer is 6'2", 202. Bo Prabula is 6'2", 205. Jackson Smolik is 6'1", 205. So he's got 40 pounds on everybody else that's in that room competing right now. But I think that you want to have a situation where Drew Aller is as successful as possible with Andy Kotelnicki here. And I think we all know that if that happens, it's hard to see a quarterback investing in today's college football universe, investing in a fourth year versus being maybe one of the top guys off of a draft board. And so just like we kind of did with the running back situation and saying, yeah, it's an RB3 storyline right now in 2024, but whoever finishes ahead of that RB3 storyline at the end of the season is all of a sudden at the front of the RB1 maybe competition next spring. And I think you can kind of discuss that a little bit at the quarterback spot. And I'll be curious to see if Ethan Grunkemeyer gets to a point where this staff wants to get him involved for some game looks in September, maybe in some of those non-conference matchups that get away on the other side, get him involved late. We only saw Jackson Smolik, I think, take two snaps as a true freshman. And they were both because Bo Prabula was in kind of in mop-up duty later in the game and had to go to the sideline to deal with like a little bit of an injury issue or something like that. So it wasn't by design. I'm curious if we get any Ethan Grunkemeyer by design in 2024, probably a long way off to talk about that right now in March, but just in something to keep in the back of your mind. Going ahead here and just kind of putting a bow on Tuesday's visit and where they are in spring ball. James Franklin said PSU has really laid the foundation in all three phases during spring camp. He says the focus moving out of spring camp and into summer will be on establishing identities for all three of those phases. Remember, three new coordinators involved, a lot of new players. Franklin told us, you know, look, there's going to be new players coming to campus in the summer too. And we don't really have our heads wrapped around those guys because we love them as high school prospects, but we're not quite sure what we're going to get. Maybe someone shows up ready to compete. Maybe they don't. And I think the other thing is here that James Franklin's not going to really talk about in this setting, but that they are definitely planning for is the transfer portal window that's about to be pried open almost immediately after the blue-white game. I think within a week, you're going to see the transfer portal window open up. It's expected to be a frenzy, and Penn State's going to be a player. Penn State's going to be looking for more potential talent to add to this team and stock up for a college football playoff run. So still an unfinished product, but James Franklin seems to be feeling pretty well, pretty optimistic about how things are rolling at this stage. Anything else to add, Daniel, in terms of what you picked up here and just general commentary as Penn State is halfway through the spring practice schedule?
Yeah, I think the identity thing was interesting and not really surprising. I think that when you talk about kind of how last season ended and the personnel changes that you had on the coaching staff, I think that this is the type of time of year when you do need to figure out what that identity is, especially on the offensive side of the ball and also on the defensive side of the ball as well. You know, a lot of those guys are back from last year's team, but you have a new coordinator who's going to put his own spin on things. And you have some new leaders in key positions. So I think that's something to follow along with. And it's kind of it's a classic thing that you want to figure out in the offseason. I think one last note on Tom Allen, when you were talking about the bowl position, is something that we might not see as much this year or in the same kind of explicit carved out role. I was going through his quotes and I thought, you know, he acknowledged that the depth that Penn State has is much different than what he was dealing with at Indiana. And when that's the case, you can kind of adjust your approach. I mean, when you're working with Indiana, you kind of got to figure out how to maximize every single player on the roster, figure out these roles, kind of carve out these different niches for guys to get them on the field and the positions to make plays. Obviously, you're still doing that with Penn State, but it's different because, like you said, you know, you can roll through, you know, five defensive ends or six defensive ends and not have so much of a drop off. So, you know, I think that you know, maybe not having that kind of explicit position. I think that that probably has a lot to do with how this Penn State roster is set up and the talent that's there. So, yeah, I think that, you know, Tom Allen is really working in a different sandbox right now. He's got a whole lot of different tools to use. And I think that this spring is big for him too in figuring out how exactly those fit together.
Change isn't comfortable typically, but I'd imagine that, I mean, the paydays were nice. All three coordinators got, you know, they're getting paid. And Tom Allen is different because he got a $15 million buyout from Indiana. Kotelnicki, Justin Lustig leaving their schools to come to Penn State. Obviously, there was some financial leverage involved there. But I'd imagine as they really got set to hit the practice field, both of them looked around and assessed the talent and the personnel that they're working with. And there can't be any question. I mean, Tom Allen, no doubt, what he had at Indiana, Penn State, going to be different. What about Andy Kotelnicki? He was the 24/7 Sports Offensive Coordinator of the Year at Kansas, but check out Kansas's level of talent. Check out Kansas's depth that they had last year and look at what we think Penn State has. I know that we're still working our way through what's going to be at wide receiver and all that, but a lot of blue chip pieces in place, some accomplished players in place for him. And then you think about Justin Lustig. This guy was a Broyles Award nominee at Vanderbilt. He's had great success down in the SEC with special teams work. And now he gets to pluck the third, you know, the third string linebacker off of Penn State's defense and get him on this coverage unit. And that third string linebacker is probably a former top 24/7 prospect. So it's just all three of these coordinators, I'd imagine, as they are you know, working their way towards this opening season, it's really starting to sink on them that the at their disposal is just different. On the recruiting trail, it's different for them now. On the practice field, it's different for them. It's just you're entering a different level of the sport, and I think that they all stand to benefit from that if they can get the job done with what they're supposed to be doing from the coaching side of things. One other note, I think we mentioned last week, Denai Dennis Sutton had not been around on the field during our earlier looks at spring practice. Good news on that end. The junior defensive end was a full go in the practice action that we witnessed on Tuesday evening. Re-adding to that really impressive defensive end group that now has Abdul Carter and Smith Vilbert's back on the field, and you've got guys like Amin Vanover and Zariah Fisher and Jameel Lyons, and the list goes on. But good news for Penn State there. A lot more coverage coming your way at lines247.com from our practice coverage. I mentioned video of both James Franklin and Tom Allen's full question and answers from the field on Tuesday. Everything that we heard from players as well, we're going to be putting that up at the site at lines247.com. I've got a story on Julian Fleming up on a Wednesday morning. Daniel has a story on the wide receiver room up from Tuesday night. And definitely check out our practice report for VIP subscribers that went up on Tuesday when we got off the field. 30% off, by the way, right now for an annual VIP subscription at lines247.com. Daniel, we wanted to finish with another glimpse over to the Penn State men's basketball program. You and Mark did a nice job breaking things down at the end of the season last week as their journey came to an end in round two of the Big Ten tournament. One game under 500, certainly looked like they could make a case for the NIT, did not get into it. And so we were right to the madness of player movement. And we saw a bunch of guys enter the transfer portal last week. And the news, just as we were walking off the football field on Tuesday evening, came through that they are retaining a top player into 2024-2025 season.
Puff Johnson is coming back for his second year at Penn State and fifth year of college basketball overall. The North Carolina transfer averaged 7.3 points per game in his first year with the Nittany Lions in 2023-2024. He scored in double digits in three of the last four games. It felt like he really sort of came on strong down the stretch. He's someone who is a former top 100 recruit. He has a basketball lineage. His older brother plays for the Brooklyn Nets. Going to North Carolina, that's a blue blood. I think there was a lot of excitement when he transferred to Penn State, but it took him, he battled an injury during the preseason. I think it took him a little bit to find his role, kind of going in and out of the starting lineup. But down the stretch with him being a key part of the bench unit, I think that really helped Penn State. He's not necessarily the same athlete as someone like DeMarco Dunn or Nick Kern Jr., but I think that Puff Johnson brings a lot of intangibles to the locker room. He was the spokesman after a couple tough losses for the Nittany Lions this winter. He bumped up his three-point shooting. He made 33.3%. That was above his career average. You know, I think that you kind of know what you're getting with him at this point in his career, but he's also shown that he can grow a little bit. So I think this is a really good get for Penn State to bring back in 2024, 2025 for Mike Rhodes, a veteran presence, team captain, someone who rose to the occasion in a couple spots. I think that's someone that you really want on your roster.
A big get, but the biggest get, of course, from that roster is Ace Baldwin, right? If he's back, and as of now, no answers on that.
Yeah, nothing official from Ace Baldwin about coming back for a fifth year. Last week, we had our season-ending news conference with Mike Rhodes, and he said that the conversations with Ace and Puff were ongoing at that point, but he wouldn't comment on them. So, you know, Ace Baldwin has a ton of options. You know, he can go pro. I think that I could see him playing in the G League. He seems like the type of player that could have a long career in Europe, if that's an option for him. And then the one thing that looms over this for everyone is the transfer portal and NIL. You know, that's just kind of how things are these days. But yeah, we'll wait and see for Ace Baldwin. I mean, if he comes back to Penn State, that's just a really, really key piece. It's Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, a team captain, someone who down the stretch, I think, really, really asserted himself as one of the better players in the conference. Took him a little bit, I think, to find his footing and making that leap up from VCU. But once he did, he's just so good. So if Penn State can bring him back, that's huge. You know, we'll wait and see. I think that it'll probably be something pretty similar to Puff Johnson's announcement, where it'll be, you know, we'll be in the middle of something else. A tweet will come across the wire, and then we got to go to work.
Yeah, maybe in the middle of a podcast recording session even. we'll stay tuned with that one. Generally speaking, I know you had an article up for our VIP subscribers earlier this week before the Puff Johnson return confirmation, just kind of resetting the picture now that they've had some departures into the transfer portal and you know what they're bringing in from a recruiting standpoint. And the transfer portal works both ways, of course. We saw Penn State essentially put together an entire roster almost using the portal last year. What is the most pressing need and kind of the obvious priorities as Penn State gets into, you know, shopping season from that perspective?
I think that you look at the front court. I think you really got to go after some bigs in the portal. Cordus Wahab's eligibility expired. Favor Ire and Demetrius Lilly, who were both sophomores last season, are in the transfer portal. I think you do have Miles Goodman coming in, who's one of the highest rated recruits Penn State has ever signed in the 24/7 sports composite rankings. He's 6'11", has a lot of experience, you know, got a taste of high level competition on overtime elite circuit this winter. But when you're talking about putting a freshman big down there in the Big Ten with some of the players who are in there, you know, that's a pretty steep learning curve. So if Penn State can find someone kind of in that Cadus Wahab mold, a veteran looking to play, you know, their final year or two, who think that they've still have some development to do. And we saw Cadus Wahab make some nice strides under Brent Scott and Mike Rhodes this year. I think that Penn State, you know, would be wise to try to look for someone in that template. And then I think that they need to replenish the youth a little bit. You know, the way that this roster is set up next season, everyone who's in the fold right now is either going to be in their final year of eligibility or their first year of eligibility. So I think that you kind of need to replenish that middle class a little bit. You know, maybe get some guys that you think can help you next season in addition to this season. I think that that's important when it comes to sustainability. You know, that's something Mike Rhodes has talked about, that he wants a lot of things about this program to be sustainable, NIL, recruiting. He said that he's still looking towards the high school ranks as how he wants to build a team. And you look at Penn State is going to bring in, they've got four freshmen in the fold right now. They're recruiting a fifth. So we'll see what that looks like. The one thing too about the portal that stood out to me that I kind of forgot about until I was going through and putting that piece together, which I would recommend people read on Lions 24/7, is that this is going to be a marathon. I don't think it's going to be a sprint. You've seen a couple programs around, you know, pick up guys in the portal over the past week, some very quick decisions. But, you know, as time goes on and teams fall out of the NCAA tournament, and we're going into the second weekend, you're going to see some more high-profile players enter the portal. And I went back, and know, Puff Johnson committed to Penn State out of the portal in late April. You know, Bragi Goodmanson, who was the only freshman, he joined the team in May. DeMarco Dunn's commitment didn't happen until June. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if it seems like things should be happening right now, you did have the extenuating circumstances last year where it was a new team and they were building a completely new team. So it's a little bit different, but I would just say keep that in the back of your mind as, you know, maybe it's the second week of April and Penn State still has, you know, 3 or 4 slots open. You know, there's a long way to go. Certain things will happen quickly, but I think that Mike Rhodes is someone who is really deliberate in what he does. So it might be a couple weeks, it might be a couple months before all of this is figured out.
I remember last summer, people were kind of wondering if they'd have to step up and walk onto the team to fill out a roster. And you know, obviously it all came together. They finished, you know, just under 500. So it came together pretty well. But yeah, March 23rd, 2023 is when Shrewsbury was officially introduced as Notre Dame's head coach. So we're a full calendar year removed from that. But when you have that kind of a change after that kind of a run, going to take a while to really get settled as a program. And I think this year two for Mike Rhodes is where you try to get that settling situation. We'll see what happens in the weeks and months to come. And Ace Baldwin's decision is a big one. Daniel Gallen does a great job covering Penn State basketball along with football for us at Lions247.com. Always appreciative of his time here on the podcast. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Next episode, we'll get into Penn State recruiting. We're all in with Tyler Calvaruso. That one will come out on early Friday. A big weekend brewing for Penn State here on campus as they get visitors here. We've been circling this weekend since really the start of March as we had confirmations for visitors, and that list has continued to grow and grow. So Tyler Calvaruso will give us the who's who of who's going to be on campus. He'll talk about the official visits that have continued to be scheduled over the course of this week. We've now got a commitment date on the radar. In fact, on next week's calendar for Matt Zollers, the top in-state quarterback prospect that Penn State put an offer out to a while ago. So we've got a lot to catch up with Tyler Calvaruso. I'll leave it there for now, but check out our next episode for a bunch on Nittany Lions recruiting. For now, big thanks to Daniel Gallen. I'm Tyler Donahue. Go check out our coverage at Lions247.com. On behalf of our entire team, thank you for listening and for watching. We'll catch up with you real soon right here on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.